thought I would just start my talk by reminding us what Bhante said about the form and the content. So he talks about the Heart Sutra having the content, the words of the Heart Sutra, and it's set in a particular form, which is a communication between Sariputra and Avalokiteshvara. So I was just thinking about us here in terms of the form and the content, because there's me sitting here and all of you out there. So yes, I'm going to say some words which will be the content, but there's a form. So we could think, well, it's me here doing the giving a talk and you kind of getting a talk. You know, you come here possibly because you want to get something. So there's a duality. There's me and there's all of you. And actually, when I look out, you know, I'm one person and you're lots of people. Which has an effect. So this talk is about shunyata. So it's about something to do with that form, but not that you're getting something and that I'm giving something. We're going beyond getting and giving. So what is happening? What is happening is a communication. There's something going on between the getting and the giving. So I'm in communication with you. You're in communication with me. And that communication, whatever I say, whether it's a good talk or a bad talk, there's love there, there's metta. So we're going beyond you and me. So if at any point during the talk you think, oh, this just isn't my type of thing, or you start saying, oh, Shubha's great, you know, you're sort of dividing out. Let's just open the heart. This is what the Heart Sutra is about, is going beyond giver and getter. And that sort of helps me to relax, because actually we're all interconnected. So I mentioned that I was going to give a talk on shunyata to my study group before leaving, and one person said, oh, you could just show them a piece of blank paper, an empty piece of paper. Maybe I was sounding a bit nervous, and it was a sort of helpful. So I went home. I think the next day I set aside I was going to prepare for the talk. And what I found myself doing was looking up on the internet how to make a lotus out of a white piece of paper. So this, it's a very mini, a great big piece of paper like that, makes a mini little lotus. It's an 8-petaled lotus. And it's emptiness. And a lotus. So this for me was a reminder of Avalokiteshvara, because the lotus is a symbol of compassion. So his communication of shunyata is coming from compassion. So we're in this sphere of metta, and we've got the lotus of compassion. You can sit there. So I'm the sort of person who likes to go back to the Sanskrit find out what the words actually mean. And interestingly, the recent scholars seem to have discovered that the Heart Sutra was first actually written down in Chinese, but there are no Chinese versions of it left. So it was translated into Sanskrit, and then we've translated it into English. So for me, a key word or a key phrase comes in the first... Oh, you're not supposed to see that. Tuck that up, because I just want... Svabhava Shunyam. So that comes in the first verse when the Heart Sutra is describing the five skandhas, the pancha skandhas, that they are svabhava shunyan. So when we say emptiness, the Heart Sutra is actually saying empty of something, which is svabhava. So it's empty, svabhava. The nearest translation would be own being. But you could translate it as essence. So it's the five skandhas are empty of essence. They're empty. Well, I'll start with objective things out there. So here we've got the piece of paper. So we've now got a torn piece of paper. So we can still say a piece of paper, and now I'm going to scrunch it into a ball. So it's now a ball, right? And then I'm going to throw it on the fire. And when it's in the fire, it will burn and it will turn to ashes. So, and the ashes maybe are going to be shoveled out and they might end up on the garden and go into the earth. So we can quite easily see that a piece of paper is empty of essence. And it goes out in the garden. I mean, the paper originally came from a tree and then it went through a whole process which included loads of people and then a shop where it was sold. And then it arrived here. There's lots of conditioned processes going on to get the piece of paper, but it is empty of essence. It doesn't exist in its own right. It exists because of conditions, basically. There's no essence there. There's no own being. But when we come to, so that's out there, we can apply that to all conditioned things out there, objective things. But then we want to come to the psychophysical being. We are made up, of physical and mental processes. So when we come to the psychophysical being, we're saying that it's empty of, you could say, a fixed self or a sort of soul or a particular sort of essence that is, you know, why you do this and why you do that. But we've been looking at the five skandhas and we've seen that all those processes are conditioned. There is no fixed essence or self in there that... So in order to look at this a bit more deeply, we're going to move on from the first thunderclap today to the second and third thunderclaps. And I sort of think of the second thunderclap. I mean, they're all thunderclaps, but for me, this is a big one. So the second thunderclap is the line Sarva Dhammaha Shunyata Lakshana. So all dharmas are by nature void, empty. So interesting, this word lakshana, because you've come across the three lakshanas. They mean the three characteristics. And we know that they mean the three characteristics of conditioned existence. But this word lakshana, it means characteristic. So all dharmas are characterized by emptiness. And emptiness meaning their svabhava shunya. So why for me this is a big thunderclap? It is historically. Because I really feel for those hundreds and maybe even thousands of Abhidharma Buddhists who were... They had the five skandhas. So the psychophysical being divided into five. But they went into this whole... It was a whole school of Buddhism. Hundreds of monks... maybe the odd nun, but working away. Looking further and further into the five skandhas to see if they could get to irreducible, where they couldn't go any further, whether they could find an essence somewhere. So they searched away... and many of their, their findings are interesting and helpful to our practice. And one of the big schools of Buddhism which took up this practice, the Savastivadins, is that they got down to 75 dharmas. 75 irreducible dharmas, basically. Irreducible elements. And obviously Shariputra was the father of that school. And then, we've heard about this before, but it just, for me, it's like Avalokiteshvara with his compassion, but he says all dharmas are characterized by emptiness. He kind of shatters that whole school. That whole idea that you can get down to something irreducible. It must have been quite a blow. And it reminds me of a story in the sutra, the White Lotus Sutra, which I also love to just imagine. So you've got... The White Lotus Sutra is a Mahayana text, so we're talking about the Buddha sitting in a company of not hundreds of monks and nuns, but thousands, and bodhisattvas, I mean just masses and masses, just, and he's sitting in this company. And he basically says... Then there are many, many arahats in the company, in the gathering. And he says, I've got a further teaching for you. And what happens is, and I can sort of even hear the kind of crumpling of their robes, is that 5,000 of them stand up and they walk out. They're arahats. We've gained enlightenment. There's not a further teaching. And there's the Buddha saying, there's a further teaching. And out they go. They don't hear it. The further teaching is the bodhisattva, the bodhisattva ideal, the Mahayana, the enlightenment is not individual, that it's for the benefit of all beings. It's a Mahayana text that he's giving. But they've gone, 5,000 of them. And this kind of, when I think about us, I think sometimes we can hold quite strongly to views, or we think we've kind of got it. We've sussed the Dharma, and then, you know, you're in a conversation with somebody and, you know, there's a bit of a rub there. But also we can think, that we're right. There might be something happened in terms of just communication, and we feel we're right and the other person's wrong. Or we see a situation and we've got a strong view of what's right and wrong in the situation. And we're not actually open to the fact that there's a bigger teaching. And this reminds me of stories I've heard of Bhante, where people went to him, you know, with a problem, like, you know, this is happening and, you know, I've got this view and, you know, what should I do about it? And they'd come into his presence and it's as if the problem would just dissolve. That wasn't what was important. What was important was that they were in communication with Bhante, and that there's a bigger picture, and just being with him would give that bigger picture without him having to even say anything. So I'm wondering how we can explore this in our own experience, that all dharmas are by nature void, empty of only being. So we're now coming on to Pitsandaplap 3, the next verse, which goes something like, Nachakshu Shrota Grana Jiva Kaya Manansi Na Rupa Shabda Ganda Rasa Sprastavya Dhammaha Na Chakshu Datu Yavana, that means go all the way until the sixth one, Na Mano Vinyana Datu. So, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, colour, no colour, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of. No.
Don't know.
Just get me.
No eye consciousness.
Yes. Mind takes hold of. Oh, yes. Or what the mind takes hold of. Nor even act of sensing. And these are the six acts of sensing. So they're not actually written out in our version of the Heart Sutra. So they're the acts of sensing. So this is the eye, consciousness, being aware of colour, up until you get the mind consciousness. So this is mind, and then our objects of mind. So these are the 18... it was many years before I realised that within the Heart Sutra there was the 18 sphere consciousnesses. So that is the sense organ, six sense organs, six sense objects, and six consciousnesses. Because you've got the organ, the eye, and then I'm seeing table, that's the object, but there's got to be awareness. There's awareness between those two. So we could also think of these in terms of the Heart Sutra as the 18 no's, because there's no I. No, there's 18 no's, this section. So what it's saying is that there's no perceptual situation. This is the perceptual situation. So we've been looking at our sense experience through our senses, meeting the objects of our senses, whether it's a bird outside or the sense of touch. So they're all, that whole process is empty, svabhava, of a fixed sense of self or an essence. It's all just happening, but it doesn't need an essence in order for it to happen. But how we actually experience it is, it's as if our, I'll go with the eyes, they look out into the world and they grasp, they sort of, so we're the grasper, and it goes out into the world and we grasp, table. So I've kind of made sense of that. So I'm grasper and I've grasped. If I don't like something, it's going to be the opposite. It's going to be sort of an averse experience. So this is when it's divided consciousness. It's divided out. Grasper and grasped. And we're doing it all the time. So I'm going to just give a few examples because I think it makes it a bit easier to understand this. So there's a story of Banti in Kalimpong, and he's going for a walk with a friend, and there's an enormous great tree in front of them, and Banti just like looks up and he's sort of, he's awestruck by the tree. He's open to it aesthetically, and he's sort of with it. There's no sense of grasping. He's just in the beauty, the awesomeness of it, because it's an enormous tree. But his friend says, "Oh, I could make 30 logs out of that, which could make a shed in my garden or something like that." So the other person is thinking of it in a grasping way, whereas Banti is just having the experience of tree. So if we're trying to think, well, what would it be like to have, if all of these are no's, so there's no kind of I in it, there's no me wanting something or not wanting something, what would the experience be like? And I think it is a heart experience. It's as if you're not coming from your head, you're experiencing from your heart, or you're experiencing from your belly or your whole being, but you're not experiencing that you want to get something from this, or you don't want to get something from it. And it would be aesthetic. You might be absorbed. So there's sort of, you're kind of absorbed in the tree. There's an experience of beauty. And if it's another living being, there may well be kind of empathy, you know, so that this subject and object are, you're not so separate from the other person. You're empathizing, like, you know, me trying to communicate something. You know, your heart might be open and you're sort of a bit empathizing, you know, with Shubha's, you know, she's trying her best. But your heart's open, as well as you're kind of getting something and you're writing your notes. So just to give you another, a personal example of me on a recent solitary, just looking out of the window, quite absorbed, there's a bird feeder and there's lots of birds pecking away, and I'm quite absorbed just sort of watching them. I'm kind of with the colours, the shapes. Also, I'm aware a bit of their fear, the way they keep kind of checking out, looking round. And their beauty, and then they fly away, their freedom. So I'm sort of with their freedom as well as their fear. And so I'm looking, and, you know, I'm quite sort of open, and then suddenly a little blue tit comes and sits on the windowsill. This has never happened before, and it looks in at me. And I'm like, wow. But within a second, it's like blue tit and me. I want you to stay there longer. You know, I want something from you. And of course, it only stays there for a few seconds, and then it's gone. So I've kind of immediately, I've just separated out. So when we, hopefully it won't be pouring with rain, we go outside, you know, we can just start, I mean, we've been doing that anyway, but just trying to get this sense of the perceptual situation, whichever sense you're using, your ears, your eyes, smell, is that you're not sort of trying to grasp in your looking, you know, that you want to get something. You're more letting it, you're just opening up through the eye sense or the ear sense, and you're just letting it come in. So you're trying just be with the experience outside. So then we come to our inner experience in meditation. So I'm just going to explore that a little bit. So we've particularly been exploring, so we've got kaya, body, and sprastavya, the sense of touch. And the thing in meditation is that different from objects out there, actually those senses of touch are within our body. So they're not quite so divided anyway. They're not sort of out there. The sense of touch is within the body. So maybe, you know, it is a bit easier to close that gap of awareness and sense of touch. And we've already looked at this already, you know, we sort of think of leg, you know, it's got a shape and it kind of... So we're going beyond what we think of our body. We're going to the direct experience, which in many ways we've already explored doesn't have words. So this is what, if we're going to go no kaya, no sprastavya, and no act of sensing it, we're just going to be in it. There's no words, there's no concepts. We're just going to be experiencing the sense of touch. And as I've said, we have been doing that. I mean, I think the breath is a good one. You know, we talk about breath rather than breathing. So it's the sensations of the breathing process, which actually, you know, if we're sensing them lower down in the body, I mean, there's no actual, the breath is in the lungs. But there are sensations there, so the sensations of the breathing process, and just trying to sort of close that gap and just rest with them, without wanting anything to happen or not happen that isn't actually happening. And being with the flow, the unfolding flow of experience, which Ratnavandana talked of yesterday. And then we've got the mind and the mind objects. You know, we're all the mind, you know, all those umpteen thoughts which quite frankly get, you know, they're just a bit endless. And then, so we've got the mind and then the mind objects. So they can be thoughts, images. So again, in terms of shunyata, when we're thinking of awareness of awareness or awareness of thoughts, we're needing to get bigger, like the blue sky and the clouds being the thoughts. So we're getting bigger. To hold that the thoughts, they don't have essence. They're arising, they're passing away. We watch them go into this story and that story and round this circle. But they don't have an essence. And a changing point in my spiritual life was when I heard the phrase, thoughts are not facts. Because so often we think our thoughts, they're a fact, that they mean something. And when I heard that, it was like, oh, okay, they're just coming and going, and I can just let them come and go. They don't actually, they're not those thoughts, those distractions. They're not necessary. They're not facts. So we're trying to not be separate from them. Sort of, there's me here and there's that thought over there. They're just arising and passing away, and they don't have an essence. So we can look at that in meditation. So just to give an example of in this area, quite recently I've been waking up in the middle of the night with quite strong sort of panicky both physical experiences, and very, very quickly there's a panicked thought. It might even be a bit of a despairing thought. So it's quite a shock, kind of waking up. But very, very quickly, there's a whole story that goes with that initial waking up thought. And, of course, I want to get out of it. I want to solve the problem. And it just creates, you know, a whole kind of cacophony of thoughts. But one particular day, I woke up in the middle of the night, as usual, same thing, kind of panic thought. But I felt it incredibly strongly in my body. So I felt it in my belly area. So I had the panic thought, and then the strength of the experience in the body was so strong that I was able to just stay with it. And I went back to sleep. And then a few hours later, it happened again. Same thing. So I didn't go into any papancha. I just came back to the belly. And when I woke up in the morning, third time, it happened again. So I woke up with this strong, strong feeling in my belly. So I started walking around the house, just feeling it, So I hadn't sort of separated off from it into a story. I was just feeling it in my body. Then I got onto the cushion, was meditating. The meditation was sort of unfolding within the physical experience. And it didn't stay as a panic, of course, it changed. And then I found I spent the whole day sort of living more from the belly because the experience had been so strong. So I wasn't living from the thoughts. I was responding to everything from the belly. And that felt very connecting. It was as if the gap between the mind and the mind object. You know, I was just in it. The mind object was belly experience. So this is Vedana. So I think, yeah, if we can explore sort of living from Vedana rather than from the feeling tone, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Yeah, we can just explore that, what that means to us, to manoeuvre around the world from our body and from Vedana rather than from thoughts. I mean, obviously we need thoughts, but yeah. So I'm coming to the last section, which is, so we've had the 18... sphere consciousness is no, so they're all empty of essence. Oops. Where's it gone? Oh, yeah. And now we're coming to the six knots. So the six knots, I call them, well, they can be called the six A's because they all begin with A. And they come in this verse, Thunderclap 2. Sarvadharma Shunyata Lakshana Anutpana Aniruddha Amala Avimala Anuna Aparipurna. So they're the six A's, perfection of wisdom. We heard last night in one letter A, not. So I will attempt to say something about those. The six knots. So, anutpana aniruddha, not born or destroyed. So, it doesn't arise, it doesn't cease. So, it all relates to this sort of grasping or pushing away. So if we're wanting something to arise, or there's a sense of arising or ceasing, it's like these knots. These two knots are as if they're not limited by time. Like we're wanting something to arise, or wanting something painful to cease. But we're in a sort of sphere here of shunyata that is it's not limited. It's not within the zone of time. So it's more that it is. We could call it that it's a sort of wishless zone, a zone where we're not wanting arising or ceasing. I'm going to give an example in a minute. I'll just kind of go through them. The next one, amala avimala, not stained or pure. So again, this is a bit like all our judgments on things, like they're good, bad. We like them, we don't like them. This is more they're not stained or pure. Again, they just are as they are. And this is where the kind of aesthetic can come in, a kind of responsiveness to life, because we're just sort of opening to life rather than judging or interpreting life. We're allowing it just to do its thing. So it's not stained or pure, and it doesn't wax or wane. It's not increasing or decreasing. It's not complete or deficient. Again, it is how it is. And this is where, you know, when we think of, well, whether it's a waxing moon or a waning moon, we're thinking in terms of space, something that's getting bigger, getting smaller. But we're thinking of a space that is not limited by space. So we're in a spaceless place, and this is, we could call this a signless. There's no signs, there's no concepts. So my example is doing Tai Chi on the peat bog. So probably most people have been to the peat bog, just a vast expanse. And there's a kind of distant horizon, little tree line. And I'm kind of in the middle of the peat bog somewhere. And I'm on retreat, so I'm quite concentrated, I'm quite in my body, quite relaxed. And in the Tai Chi, sometimes you move a whole full 180 degrees. So you're facing that way, and then you go all the way, 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 over to there. And I, on this particular occasion, I had a sort of experience where I was just in every moment of the movement. So whether it was my eyes or my physical body, they weren't trying to sort of get to the next bit in the Tai Chi. So I was right in it when I was there, right in it when I was there. There was no, well, it's coming back to the first one, which is the wishless. There was no kind of wishing to move on, to get to the end of that point. That had dropped away. So I'm just in every moment, not wishing for something to arise or something to cease. I'm very aware of the beauty, and, well, I'm just sort of aware of what is there. So whatever the eyes rest on, whether, you know, it's rushes or maybe a little thing floating in the air, but I'm not attaching to it. I'm just with it. I'm just open. The heart is open. So I'm responsive to the environment. So it's not stained or pure. It just is as it is. And then finally, I'm aware. Well, we call horizon. You know, this is what I saw. Or what, when you're on the peat bog, you see right at the edge, you see this little line of trees, this little line. And we call that horizon. But that's just a concept. It's just a name for what it is. But the experience, so I'm doing a whole load of horizon from there to there. But it's no longer horizon. Because in a way, each moment of awareness is it in itself. So it doesn't form a horizon. It's just that bit, that bit, that bit, that bit, that bit. So it's a concept, horizon. So we're going beyond signs and concepts. Okay, time to finish with a little finishing thing, just coming back to the paper.
Thank you.
example it up. No essence on the fire. So, this is a symbol of emptiness. Of it's got no own being, and it's empty. It could be vast. It's just expanding out into space, and it's got no essence. So it's flat, and it's round, and it's just a symbol of emptiness. And here we've got lotus, which is form. And again, form. This form doesn't. That hasn't got essence, but neither has form got essence. I mean, I don't want to just scrunch it up. But just like our experience, whether it's the lotus having form, or whether it's one of our many experiences, it doesn't have essence. So we've got. This could be a moon mat, a symbol of a moon mat. And the moon mat can often be symbolizing receptivity, the wisdom aspect of the enlightened mind. And the lotus, of course, is compassion. So we've got moon mat, wisdom, compassion. So this is like gaining enlightenment, you know, opening out into emptiness. And this is for the sake of all living beings. So we could have moon mat on lotus. Enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. But, better still, I'm going to turn it into a jewel. So this is a jewel. The jewel goes in the lotus, jewel in the lotus, the bodhicitta. So the will to enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. Om Mani Padme Hum. Okay.